Welcome to another episode of the Entrepreneur to Employer podcast. I am your host, Brian Montes, founder of Skillosity Works and of the Entrepreneur to Employer coaching community. Now, in the Entrepreneur to Employer coaching community, I have the opportunity to guide founders and entrepreneurs and business owners on hiring employee number one and beyond to help give them the leadership skills necessary to create an employee experience that's going to deliver a competitive edge for your business and to help you build a 7 to 8 figure business that is no longer a job, but a business that provides the financial freedom that you always wanted out of your business. Now, I know your time is valuable, and I do appreciate you taking the time to listen to this podcast. Every time you tune in to the Entrepreneur to Employer podcast, you can expect to learn actionable insights to help you build a business that is worthy of a Best Places to Work award, and how to reduce business risk with proactive HR strategies that do have real-world applications. So as you go through the Entrepreneur to Employer journey, I will work to sharpen your skills on how to recruit, hire, and onboard the best people for your company, how to design training systems that work, how to establish proactive HR systems that will actually lower your business risk, how to improve employee performance, how to lead your team through both good times and bad, how to tie your people operations into your financial milestones, and much, much more. So if you're ready to build a team of 10Xers that can power your business to new heights, let's get started. Welcome back to another episode of the Entrepreneur to Employer podcast. Today, we are going to talk about the subject of things that we as leaders do, intentionally or unintentionally, that ultimately make our employees quit. Right? We spend a lot of money on recruiting, onboarding, and training. The latest statistics show us that every new employee, we spend about $4,500 just to get them in the door. And the cost of replacing them will become even higher, especially the longer they are with us. So we need to be very cautious and careful of the things we do day in and day out in the business, because we may do things and not even realize that we are starting to impact that employee experience, or we're starting to make that employee question whether or not they want to be there anymore. And ultimately, what we do can make that employee quit. So I've got 8 things that we're going to go over today and talk about that people do without even realizing it. And these mistakes will cost you good employees. All right, let's get into it. So the first mistake that I personally have made, and I know plenty of other business owners and founders that I've worked with have made, is setting inconsistent goals or expectations. Especially when you're a business owner and a founder, you've got capital on the line, you've got your goodwill on the line, you've got relationships on the line, your family's looking at you going, right, you're crazy for starting this business, right? You've got a lot of pressure on you day in and day out. It's very lonely being a founder, right? And because we are feeling a tremendous amount of pressure to make the business succeed, make sure we can pay our bills, grow the business, and all the other things that we personally have to accomplish, sometimes we set inconsistent goals or expectations because we're trying to move quicker, we're trying to move faster, we're trying to drive things forward in a more timely manner, or at least timely up to what we think. Because as business owners, the only thing we're fighting is time. So consider this scenario. A sales representative at a rental car company has chosen between serving her next client or correctly logging her previous client's information into the system. Her manager has made it clear that slow service is poor service, but she knows that improperly entering customer information could ultimately get her fired. So choosing between these two tasks creates a tremendous amount of stress for her. And the stress happens to her on a daily basis. And as a consequence, she ends up hating her job. She ends up resenting that policy, right? This is a case where there's a goal or expectation that is set and there's no flexibility in it. That information has to be logged in right away or there's a problem. So instead of, you know, working with that next customer that comes through the front door, she is spending time to log the stuff into the system and therefore ignoring that customer. That customer is now standing there waiting to be serviced, which in turn, her manager says, well, slow service is poor service, but she's caught between a rock and a hard place. Now, this situation is not uncommon. You know, when employees are forced to choose between tasks in order to meet competing expectations, the result is that your team is going to be stressed out when they do not have clear priorities. Because when everything's a priority, nothing's a priority. When we set up expectations and goals, we also need to spend the time with that employee going through how to prioritize. What's the top 2 or 3 priorities? What are the other ones that can wait? Yes, those things need to be done, but they don't need to be done right that moment. setting those expectations so that they are manageable is critical. In the end, how can you avoid this situation? Well, let's take a note from Disney, right? Big employer, you know, happiest place on earth, et cetera, et cetera. Now, each worker in the Magic Kingdom is given a list of priorities with items ordered from the most to the least important. Safety comes first, followed by courtesy, and then finally, efficiency. So when team members find themselves in sticky situations or where those priorities are starting to become competing, no one is confused about how to manage them because they have this checklist. They know, okay, safety comes first, followed by courtesy, followed by efficiency. So they look at their checklist, they look at the situation they're in, and they can make a decision about how to proceed because Disney's been very clear in outlining what comes first, what comes second, what comes third. Now, you can create the same kind of stability on your team by being consistent and clear with your expectations. Write them down, even if it's only for yourself. Why it's a good reason to write it down is because when you put it on paper, you get a chance to see if there's any contradictions or any overlapping. Once you do that, make the necessary changes and share that. By doing so, you will empower your team and ease their stress by giving them a greater sense of control over their tasks. Most importantly, you're going to make the workplace just a little more pleasant. All right, mistake number two that us as business owners, founders, leadership, managers, whatever our role is, this mistake can cause your team, your employees to want to leave as well. And that's having too many process constraints in place. What are process constraints? Well, process constraints often occur when there's a lack of information, resources, or some other factor that will stop your employee from doing their job. You know, I've seen this take place. So for example, when an employee is forced to wait for several other tasks to be completed before they can move forward with a project, these conditions will naturally and by themselves inhibit performance. And of course, performance is going to be evaluated. So you have an employee who cannot do the job that they're hired to do because there are 5, 10, or 15 process constraints or steps or tasks that are out of their control that have to happen first before they can proceed. So they can't even get to what they're supposed to do, and it's not their fault. So what's the result of this? Well, the result is that the employee begins to feel powerless, right? They feel they don't have enough control over the job that they're hired to do. Morale is going to start to drop, work quality is going to start to drop, and frustration is going to start to rise. Consider context when evaluating performance. Look at the overall criteria and consider how much control your employee has over their outcomes, as well as how much control you have over any constraints that may be affecting their output. Talk to them openly about performance and ask questions that will help them communicate any concerns on their end. And this is why the regular one-to-ones with your employees are so important, because you can quickly identify and quickly address process complaints when you're having regular conversations with your employees, because you're going to identify them in those conversations, you're going to find a way to work through them, and you're going to empower your employee to be able to do the job that you hired them to do. Now, if you find for a fact that process constraints are impacting your employee's ability, you have the ability to improve the situation. They don't, right? You're the business owner, you're the leader, you're the department manager, whatever your role is, you have the ability to remove some of those process constraints. And, you know, this may require having difficult conversations with other people in the company, but it's your job as the leader of that employee to help undo the bottlenecks that are making it hard for them to do their job. And if you're the business owner, well, then you have all the power to make that decision. All right, mistake number three, wasting of resources. This is a huge one. Envision this, you're a marketing manager. You have until next Friday to roll out a new campaign. It's Tuesday, which should theoretically leave you plenty of time, but there's a problem. You have 6 meetings for a total of 4.5 hours today. The following day, you have 7 meetings, which eat up about 6 hours of your day. On Thursday, you have to attend a team training session for 5 hours. So the question becomes, when are you supposed to do this work? You've given your employees so many meetings that they don't have any time in which to sit down and do focused work on that campaign. This is what I call resource waste. So in this example, and many others, the resource that is getting wasted here is time. And time is the most precious asset that any of us have. So employees that are constantly crunched for time are going to get burned out faster, and that's going to impact the quality of the work they deliver. If you don't give your team the resources that they need to succeed, you are setting them up to fail. It's not uncommon for employees in this situation to leave and seek out a company with a more sustainable work culture, right? It is our job as business owners to make sure that we do not set meetings for the sake of setting meetings, that we don't waste our employees' time, that we respect when they are doing focused, deep work, and we give them the space that they need to do the work that we're asking them to do. If we're wasting resources, employees are going to get frustrated, and rightfully so. So how can you avoid the situation? I mean, that's the big question, right? Sometimes busy weeks are going to result in wasted resources, and it does happen. Not every single week is going to be optimized for perfect productivity. That doesn't exist. But by creating a list that ranks the importance and impact of your employees' tasks, that's a start. And if your employee, if they know that that campaign is due on Friday and the expectations have been set clearly and everybody's on the same page, help them itemize the tasks they need to complete by that deadline. And consider, by doing this, make sure that the date is realistic and make sure that the workload that is required to hit this task is reasonable. And then before you assign them any additional tasks or invite them to any meetings, say, ask yourself, is this new task a priority? Does this employee really need to attend this meeting? If the answer is no, give them space to do the most important work. I'll give you a great example. I was talking to one of my team members today, and he puts together reporting for me. And every week he sends me a report, one of my KPIs that I look at on Monday. And this week I realized I wanted to change some of the data in there, which means we need to change how the data goes into our system. So he and I had a conversation on that yesterday, and he agreed that the additional data I was asking for would give me more context to make better, smart decisions. But he also reminded me that he's at a workshop Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of this week. And I said, hey, no problem. This can wait till next week. So while it's important that we get this task done, it wasn't a high enough priority that I was willing to say, don't attend your workshop. I want this data now. So we discussed it and we agreed that next week he would start on reformatting the data so that my report was different. So we are making sure that we're looking at the resources and allocating them accordingly. Mistake number four, putting people in the wrong roles. Yes, I have been guilty of doing this as well. And it is something that as you hire more people and you start to really learn how to build teams, you get good at making sure that you put people in the right roles and not in the wrong roles. And I'll give you a great example of how this happened to me before and how I corrected it. So I worked for a company, it was a startup, and we took the startup from nothing to $100 million a year in annual revenue and a few employees to 150 employees. And I had a sales team that was nationwide. I had 50 people on my sales team. And I had a young lady on my sales team that was phenomenal from the standpoint that she aligned with the company's core values. She absolutely was meant to be part of our company. The problem was, is she struggled with sales. As much training as we gave her, as much that we worked with her and coached her and tried to bring her along on the sales side, she was struggling. So she was unhappy because she wasn't succeeding in the role she was hired to be in. And of course, we were frustrated. I was frustrated because she wasn't hitting her numbers. But when I took a step back and I looked at the situation, I said, you know what? This young lady absolutely deserves a job with this company. So I sat with her and we started talking about her goals, what she felt her strengths were at, what I felt her strengths were, and we moved her into the call center. And she succeeded there very quickly. One, she was happy to be off the road. She didn't have to travel anymore. Two, she loved being on the phone. Three, she wasn't asking customers for a sale. She wasn't asking, you know, customers for money. She was dealing with people who were already customers, and her job was to keep them happy, which she did a fabulous job at. So not only did she excel at that job, she promoted. So it was great to see her go into that role and just excel. So when we put people into the wrong roles, what happens is we get a disconnect because they either feel that their skills aren't being used correctly or they get imposter syndrome because they're like, I can't do this job you're asking me to do, but I need a paycheck, so I'm going to try and do it. It's a lose-lose situation, right? The employee gets frustrated because they're in a role that they don't feel they can do or succeed in or have the skill set to do. And the company's going, well, you know, hey, you're not hitting your marks here. You're not performing. We're not getting out of you what we hired you to do. So it's extremely important that we spend the time in the hiring process to make sure that we are hiring the right person for the role at hand. So how do you avoid this situation? It's best to be extremely transparent about the role you're hiring for and what is required to be successful in that role. And you do that during the interview process. Every time I interview somebody, when we start the conversation, it's not me asking them to tell me about yourself or let's go over this job. No. When I start an interview with a candidate, my first part of the conversation is, let me tell you about the company, let me tell you about the role, and let me tell you what success looks like. How am I defining success in the role? I want them to understand that so that right out the gate in that interview, they know, yes, I can do this, or no, this isn't for me. And trust me, this will save you a lot of time if you do this upfront right away at the beginning of the conversation. Okay, mistake number five that I see. And that is assigning boring or overly easy tasks. I mean, at the end of the day, we all have tasks that we have to do that are going to be boring and that we don't want to do, but we just have to do them because it's just part of the job or part of life. But if that ends up being 50, 60, or 70% of what your employee does every day, and they are looking for a challenge and they like, you know, making an impact and adding value, they're not going to stick around, right? If you don't challenge them, what incentive do they have to continue working hard and stick around with your company? I mean, think about the last time you had to go to a work event that you didn't even want to attend, right? Maybe you had to have conversations with a lot of people that were uninteresting, or you had to sit through really long seminars in a single day. I mean, how did you feel after that? You were tired, you were drained, you weren't energized, you're exhausted. Why is that happening? Well, it's happening because you have to suppress your emotions and you're having to, you know, bring down your energy level. And you are probably bored throughout the day. So if you have an employee with a light workload who constantly takes an excessively long time to finish those tasks, don't just assume they're lazy. Less work is not always easier work, right? When employees don't have enough to do or they're not challenged, they can lose motivation and negative emotions are going to start creeping in. And then they're going to suppress those emotions and they just start getting exhausted with the job. The net result? Their work satisfaction is decreasing. They're not happy with their job. Engagement's going to drop off. And employees are going to start asking themselves, is this the right job for me? So how do you avoid this situation? Well, get creative. If your team member has a history of stable performance, top-level performance, they are probably going to be open to extending their capabilities and taking on more challenging work during their downtime, right? Give them a new task to work on. Give them a new skill set to develop. Give them a stretch goal. Right? Give them something that gets them ready for the next chapter in their career and help them develop that and execute on that. Before assigning any of those tasks, ask your employee about their interests, their passions, right? This all goes back to the regular one-to-ones, getting to know that employee and, you know, what are their goals? Where do they want to go? And based on those answers, give them some work that's going to enhance their knowledge, going to enhance their skills, and it's going to help them grow in the right direction. A learning agenda with target goals and a roadmap outlining how they will reach them is going to help you keep track of those, and it allows you to add that to your one-to-one conversations. Okay, mistake number six, failing to create a psychologically safe culture. Now, don't get me wrong here. We do not live in a world of certainty. Whether you work for a big Fortune 500 enterprise-level company or a startup, the whole concept of workplace safety and never getting fired or laid off does not exist. I mean, as of today, April 19th, 2023, we know that Facebook, Meta, whatever it's called, has laid off another 10,000 people. So this is their second or third round of layoffs. So I don't mean a safe culture from the standpoint of job security until you retire, because that's not the world we live in. What I'm referring to when I talk about a psychologically safe culture is that we don't create a hostile work environment. And hostile work environments, they are easy for people to spot. You know, so if you notice employees being overly agreeable or super quiet in meetings and not contributing, that is a bad sign. If they are afraid to speak up, that is a bad sign. Because when employees feel fear that their thoughts or ideas are going to be met with repercussions or negativity or just be dismissed, this is how they're going to behave. They're just going to stop communicating because they're operating in a fear-based culture. So employees who do not feel psychologically safe to communicate their ideas, talk openly, be candid, one, they're going to be more prone to error. 2, they're going to be less likely to take risks. And 3, they're not going to want to participate in healthy conflict. And 4, they're probably not going to grow in their roles. To the opposite, team members that feel psychologically safe are productive, innovative, and they enjoy a sense of belonging in the organization. So how can you avoid this situation? Well, to create a psychologically safe work environment, show your team that you're open to new ideas. In meetings, ask questions before posing answers and acknowledge those who speak up by thanking them for their input and following up with additional questions. Take the time to consider all viewpoints when brainstorming solutions to difficult problems and make sure that your team knows there's no such thing as a wrong answer. Now, if an idea has a lot of potential, you might even ask that employee to run with it and present it at upcoming meetings or put together a strategic plan around it. And if the idea that comes up is not one that you can utilize or implement, that's okay. Just take a few minutes to explain, hey, great idea, here's why we can't use it right now. But you know what? We might need that idea in 6 months or a year, or this idea might spawn another idea. So you still need to take a few moments to provide some feedback. The more you can incorporate your team's feedback into projects and strategies, the more empowered, valued, and safe they're going to feel working for you. And last but not least on this topic, show some humility. Look, I have made plenty of mistakes as a leader. I have made plenty of mistakes with employees. And when I started owning up to my faults and admitting that, hey, I don't have all the answers, I make mistakes. I'm going to screw up, and I'm probably going to screw up again. They're going to respect you for that position. Right? Take on the perspective that failure is an opportunity to grow, and your team's going to start to do the same. Mistake number 7, creating a work environment that is too safe. Now, yes, I just talked about creating a psychologically safe environment. I get it. But we can also go too far to the other extreme and create an environment that is too safe. What do I mean by that? Look, studies show that a moderate level of pressure and friction at work is healthy for employee growth. The last thing we want in a boardroom discussion is everybody nodding their head and saying yes, right? There has to be challenging of ideas. There has to be a push out of the status quo. The most dangerous thing a business can say is that's how we've always done it, right? That's not how we're going to get 1% better every day. That's not how we're going to drive continuous improvement. But the key to this is moderation, right? When your employees feel overly pressured to perform well in their roles, they can lose sight of what's important. And in acts of desperation, they may even use unethical means to excel, right? We don't want that, right? That shouldn't be anywhere in how you run your business. But on the other hand, if your employees have no pressure at all, they're going to start to wonder if work even matters, right? So there has to be some degree of pressure, right? Time is of the essence. The only thing we're fighting is time. You heard me say that earlier in this podcast. So there has to be a level of urgency around the work and the results that are generated. Because people who find no meaning or purpose in their work are going to perform way below that potential. They're going to be less productive. And in the end, they're going to be less loyal because the organization itself isn't presenting itself as a purpose-driven organization. So how do you avoid this situation? Well, one way is to create a healthy amount of friction to provide your team with regular feedback. Now, when you provide regular feedback, you're providing both positive and negative feedback, right? You're giving a 360 view. And when you deliver that feedback thoughtfully and without judgment, negative feedback can give people something meaningful to work towards. Be sure to remind your employees of what they are doing well and how their role contributes to the goals of the larger organization, no matter how big or how small their contribution is. In turn, they will start to see how they fit into the big picture, and it should help them start to get a greater sense of purpose with the organization. Mistake number 8, and I think we are definitely, I know I've been guilty of this, and it took me a long time to overcome this, and I still have to make sure I look in the mirror regularly and check myself, but it's leading with bias. Consumer studies show us how much customers value being treated fairly by the companies that they give their money to, and the same can be said for employees working for that company. So leaders who are fair and without bias are leaders that employees can trust, and a trusting manager-employee relationship will define a best places to work environment. It's going to improve performance, and it's just bottom line good for revenue. When you have leaders that don't lead without bias, what you have is a leader who will pick and choose, and they will have their favorite employees, and they will have their employees that are not their favorites. And it's not based on performance. It's not based on contribution to the organization because, yes, some employees will outperform others. And of course, when that happens, they're going to rise to the top. But we still have to lead without bias, meaning that we cannot allow our personal feelings to interfere with how we treat our team. You cannot treat employee A differently from employee B simply because you like employee A better. Maybe you guys like the same football team, or you like the same type of clothing. Whatever it is, whatever that bond is that happens, you have to push back past that and lead without bias. Because employees see when their leaders lead with bias. They know when people are getting treated differently simply because of some type of personal attribute. And this creates a lack of trust. And the lack of trust is going to result in low morale, and it's going to end up being a team with little or no guidance. So it's really, really important that as a leader, you check yourself at the door and you make sure that you are treating everybody equitably as humans. The performance may separate them, but you're not treating them differently simply because y'all like the same football team or y'all like the same type of clothing or y'all have the same hobbies. So how do you avoid the situation? Practicing self-awareness is a great start, right? Leaders who can recognize their implicit biases and make adjustments to overcome them are more likely to lead in a fair and just manner. And, you know, before you make an important decision, consider what is driving that decision. Take some time to step back and reflect upon that decision coming up. Are you basing your choices off of evidence or just preference? Have you considered other perspectives? Are there any gaps in your knowledge that you need to fill first? Ask for regular feedback from your team, act on that feedback, and focus on building a culture of fairness and open communication. Now, it's true that there is no way you can control every aspect of your team's work experience. If someone wants to leave your company bad enough, they're going to, and it's going to happen. So focus on your own behaviors, control what you can control, and that alone will do wonders to improve the performance of the organization, the performance of your team, the cohesiveness of your team, and the retention of your team. The better you manage, the more productive, innovative, satisfied, and most importantly, the more loyal your team will be. That's a wrap on today's Entrepreneur to Employer podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode.